108 now on WGN. Good afternoon. It's John Williams. You hear me weekday mornings from 9 to noon. And every now and then on a Saturday when we don't get preempted for Northwestern football or basketball or soon-to-be White Sox baseball. In fact, we'll have a relatively shorter show today. We'll go until 2:45, and then Dave Ennett brings you pregame coverage of that game that you heard James mention, Northwestern basketball, this afternoon here on WGN Radio. If you're heading downtown, you got, what, about 21 minutes before Bernie Sanders and company congregate at Grant Park. And remember, this is the weekend that you are setting your clocks forward. You've probably heard that a lot. The thing I have not gotten a definitive answer to, we spent some time on my show this week talking a little bit about daylight saving, and I tried not to say daylight savings, is this law in Illinois that says that we won't do that anymore. We won't spring forward. We won't fall back. We'll just have one time all the time. I'm okay with that. I could be persuaded either way. The thing I didn't get my head around and still don't know the answer to is, if we do that in the fall, will the Bears games, instead of being at noon, be at 1? Will that change the time of coast games for the White Sox or the Cubs, and will we have to stay up later for some of them? And I'm sure that's as plain as the nose on your face, but it's not to me. But people say, well, that's, you can say you don't care, but then the 3 o'clock games will now start at 4. We'll be an Eastern Standard Time town. And I said, oh, okay. And then somebody else called in and said, no, we won't be. So there I am. If you can sort that out, 312-981-7200. Speak at great length to producer Griffin. John Weideman's on the phone. He's the play-by-play voice here on WGN Radio, Blackhawks Hockey. Hey, John, how are you? Thanks for joining us today.
John, happy to be on. And what a beautiful day here in Chicagoland, huh?
Yeah,
it's,
I'm glad.
Kind of weather.
It's one of you've been busy. Thursday game, Friday game, Saturday game. Sunday game. Nice that you have Saturday off, huh?
Yeah, it really is. I'm having an opportunity here today. I've got my dog with me, my dog Dublin, actually, and we're actually getting into the car as we speak. I got to go pick up my son, but we've had a little time today to walk around, breathe in the fresh air, and just enjoy life. It's been nice.
Give me just a few minutes of your time before you go back and do your day off stuff. I appreciate you giving us some time. 14 games left for the Blackhawks, 9 of them at home. They had won 4 in a row, and with the Red Wings, we thought maybe we'd make it 5. That didn't happen, but just tell me how you're feeling about the Blackhawks getting into the playoffs, John.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to say that I think that they don't have a great chance. I would say the chances are, 25% or below. But as long as they're not mathematically eliminated, I think that there always is a chance. I'm not going to beat the dead horse of, the St. Louis Blues are in last place January 1st of 2019,
right.
And they won the Stanley Cup. I guess I just did, but I digress. But the truth is that until you are mathematically eliminated, there's a lot that can happen. And the Blackhawks are 6 points out. Unfortunately, the opportunity was there last night to stay within 4 of the pack of teams that are ahead of them. And unfortunately, they blew the opportunity, not by choice, obviously, or indifference to the game and the importance of the game. But you know what? You've got to give the Red Wings a lot of credit. Troy Murray was talking about this last night. The Red Wings came and played hard, and it seemed like they wanted it, and they weren't going to lay down. And I've never seen a Blackhawks-Red Wings game where the Red Wings didn't show up, regardless of where the teams were in the standings.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they needed to expect that last night. And Troy made a good point, I think, early, too. He's played 15 years in the National Hockey League. He knows what he's talking about. He didn't see that the energy level was where he felt it needed to be early in the game. I mean, the shots in period number 1 were 9-9, so you're not sure if that really is a true reflection of where the energy level needed to be. But they had come off such an emotional high the night before of beating the Edmonton Oilers and really having to have everybody engaged in order to get that done at the United Center. And there was a great crowd. There was great energy there. And, when you come off of that, you leave the building, you go and you get on the charter and you just sort of have a meal and then you just sort of deflate a little bit. Getting that revved back up the following night, against a team that's a last-place team that everybody knows they're going to finish in last, And that is not in any way to disrespect or disparage the Detroit Red Wing organization, but that's where they are in the standings. It goes back to what pro football coach Bill Parcells used to say, you are what your record says you are.
Yeah.
So that's what they were facing. They were facing a first-place team, and then the following night, a last-place team. No excuses. They're professionals. They got to be ready to go under any circumstances, but it just wasn't there early. And there were a couple of missed chances early in that game. Alex DeBrincat had a grade A scoring chance from beside the net, just couldn't elevate the puck, and it went the Red Wings' way. So that's how it goes, but a lot of hockey left to play.
Take one of those power plays back, too. Well, that's it. I mean, 14 games left. They don't have to win them all, do they, John? Do they control their destiny? And I'm just, you know, maybe hoping that we have some home ice advantage once in a while. Do they have to win all of the games to make the playoffs?
I don't know about all of them, but I think they have to win most of them. you say, okay, well, good luck there. But if you look at the schedule, you see that the home schedule, if they can take advantage of home ice, and so far they've been able to do that here in the month of March.
Yeah,
you got San Jose. Yeah, actually, you got St. Louis coming in tomorrow. Obviously, that's not going to be an easy game, but that's a game. See that the Blackhawks can get revved up for and get ready to play because it's St. Louis. They haven't beaten them this year yet, but they've played them pretty hard at both times in St. Louis. They got shut out here by the Blues last time the Blues were here, but you know if they can bring it and play their best game against St. Louis, I mean, who only knows. Then they play San Jose Wednesday night. Then they play Ottawa Friday night. They got to go to Washington Saturday night. That's not going to be easy. They've got a home-and-home pair with Minnesota coming up the following week with that home game on Thursday. Go to Buffalo for a Saturday game. Come home and play Nashville on Sunday night. And then Sidney Crosby in Pittsburgh Wednesday. Dallas.
Yeah.
You know where I'm going. It's mostly home games. And everybody knows that we got the greatest fans in hockey coming to our building. So they're going to do their part. We've always known that. And so the boys, I think they've got to look at this thing and say, okay, it's only 6 points. And in a week, you can erase 6 points. But you got to pay attention to the detail. Everybody's got to bring a little bit more. And, you know, who knows? Maybe we can make this happen.
Make the Cinderella story that much more fun. You enjoy this fun day, sir, with your dog and your kids and your bride. And have a good day off. We'll be listening tomorrow night. It's a 6:30 broadcast on WGN Radio, and it's a home game. Let's show up.
You got it, John. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
It's always good to hear the voice of John Weideman. He's a maestro. It's 1:16. By the way, here's a headline right now that just moved on the Daily Herald's website. Jewel Osco limiting purchases. Instacart deliveries surge in response to coronavirus fears. The Mincy Rascals talked a little bit about that in our weekly podcast that we post Thursdays around 5 p.m., and we did a couple of days ago. I want to feature just a little bit of that. In fact, we'll get to the gang talking about that and how it's affecting us here in Chicago in a minute. But I want to start with the conversation that we had with Heather Sharon from the Daily Line and Austin Berg from the Illinois Policy Institute. Steve Bertrand's in the mix, too. And here the gang is talking about the Red Line shooting and the city's response to safety on the CTA. It's an ongoing theme in these parts. First voice you hear is Austin Berg.
The CTA Red Line shooting of those officers, they were clearly not trained to subdue someone appropriately, regardless of whether or not they should have even been, you know, tackling this guy for jumping train cars, which is ridiculous. But clearly that escalated because of a lack of training and awareness of how to properly subdue someone who is at risk of harming themselves or others.
Last Friday it was, right? On the
hours
red line.
Hours after the mayor announced a whole new safety plan for the CTA.
Which I'm glad they have, right? I mean, I was the one championing this. That's my stop. I missed that shooting by an hour that day. So I'm like, hooray, let's get the cops out there. I want to show force, and I physically want them in the way in some instances. And then this happens. It's like the exact wrong thing to happen. And I don't know if those officers were trained or not, but they certainly weren't capable of subduing that guy. And I don't know what he was on. I don't know that he was on anything. He may have had some marijuana on his person.
And who cares if he was, right?
They ought to be able to with pepper spray, which didn't seem to subdue him, with a taser, which didn't seem to subdue him, and two police officers. If they have been trained, I can't imagine they weren't, how to subdue somebody. They weren't capable of doing it either. You've seen the video. I wonder if because they've got a vest on underneath, you know, a bulletproof vest, and then they've got their jackets and all of the clothes they wear, and I don't think they're very mobile or agile. But it was just a cluster, the two of them wrestling. It was just bad theater.
Stop! Stop resisting! Stop resisting!
Who's the f***ing in there? Who's the f***ing in there?
Get out! Get out!
The guy breaks free, and now he's going up the steps. Actually, before he started to go up the steps, really, is when the female officer shot him.
Well, right. Well, yeah. He went up, and then you hear the shot. And it did seem so, they seem so ill-prepared. And yeah, your mobility is going to be compromised when you're wearing all that stuff. But also, the nature of policing has become so combative that they do have all of that stuff, and they're not being trained in, you know, I was talking to one of our budget and tax director at Illinois Policy. He's the sweetest man ever. His name's Adam Schuster, and he used to be a professional MMA fighter.
Oh. And he said, I did not know that about Adam.
It's one of the best
Adam
facts. Good to know.
Will not make him angry.
Yeah. And he, when he saw that, I mean, he just shook his head down and said, you put those two people in a jiu-jitsu gym for 2 days, and they will learn how to properly use their bodies in order to leverage their weight, their balance, in order to subdue someone properly. And just why isn't it being done? And then not only to not be able to do that, to be able to take down someone with your own body as a public safety officer, but to then have the second reaction be to draw your gun and shoot in a station.
Shooting up a stairwell, you or I could have been walking down.
So the other thing I think that we need to focus on is the fact that the report filed by these two officers does not indicate that there were shots fired. That at no point...
Still? Really?
Yeah. That this report filed does not say that this man was shot. It just says that he was injured as a result of the physical altercation.
Where we put bullets in him.
Yes.
Yeah, those injuries.
And so if we had not had that gentleman filming this, we would not have any understanding of what actually happened here. The tone of the response to this has been entirely different than what it would have been under Eddie Johnson or previous superintendents.
How so?
The statement from Charlie Beck was like, we think that there are probably criminal actions here, and we've invited the state's attorney, and we've asked her to drop the charges.
And I thought Beck's response was spot on, one of the best response to a police-involved shooting that I've seen in Chicago.
So different.
What do you mean by that? What did he say?
The fact that they're immediately stripped of their police powers, the fact that there's a criminal investigation into someone wildly wielding a weapon.
Well, it was less than 12 hours later that he acknowledged that the police might have done something wrong, where it was literally years before the police department acknowledged they had done anything wrong with a somewhat similar video of Laquan McDonald. That is a reflection of how far things have come.
That's why I was kind of jaw-dropped when you said that. Post Laquan McDonald, you would think that they would be pretty honest as they can be in their police reports. Am I naive here?
There's been such a breakdown of trust between rank and file police officers and leadership, I think, over time, that they, you don't want to say this strongly, but feel free to lie with impunity because of the way that the rules have been set up. And that's what was sort of so refreshing about Beck's response. And he comes from LA, which has a completely different governance structure for police discipline. And it's a way better one, and one that Chicago, incidentally, should copy.
Are we on board that we would like to see more security officers or police officers on the tracks or on the platforms or on the train cars?
I take the blue line every day, and I don't feel unsafe. I mean, I've taken the CTA since I was a, 15-year-old high school senior or high school freshman, so I might have a skewed notion of, sort of...
You ride it at night?
Not usually, but I have, and I do, and I, usually just take, hand-washing precautions, ride in the first car. If there's somebody who gives you a bad vibe, you change cars, stuff that, literally was explained to me on how to ride the L when I was a teenager.
So you don't think this
teenager.
Is that necessary?
I mean, I haven't seen it, but of course, all it takes is a person being shot in the tunnel between Jackson and the Jackson stop and the red and the blue line, and then you've got a tourism problem. You have a visitor problem, and so you have to take action.
I bike when it's nice enough out, but yeah, otherwise I'm on the brown line. We were at that station. Do you remember that? We got on that red line station together on a car.
Oh, that's right.
Remember?
Yes, I do.
It was that exact same station. And coming back from O'Hare on the blue line after a late flight, not fun. I mean, but that's the city, And there's not, I don't know the numbers well enough to know if there's a violence spike on the blue line recently. It's really difficult to justify increasing the number of the interactions of people who clearly are not trained well enough to deal with these situations. Because you're going to get problems like this. Not even media problems, people problems.
Especially when you have a movement in the city that's basically saying, we don't need more police, we need less policing. And if there were less police, we would be safer.
We have a movement that's saying that?
Absolutely.
We need less police?
Absolutely.
Less policing?
Yes, absolutely.
What's the logic of that?
That the police, by their presence, create antagonistic interactions.
I get that, but I mean, so the way to fight crime or...
Well, the way to fight crime, and I'm not arguing this side, is to focus on, you know, poverty alleviation, to focus on economic development, to say, you're committing a crime. Well, why are you committing a crime? Are you hungry? Do you not have a home? Are you suffering from substance abuse? To address those root causes rather than, you know, sort of just arresting people.
Well, back to the CTA for just a second, though. If I knew there was going to be a police officer on my train car, on my platform maybe, after a Sox game at night, I would feel a lot better about taking the Red Line. It goes from door to door for me. I could walk from my place to the Red Line stop in a minute, and I could be a minute from the ball game if I took the Red Line at night. I'm not 100% comfortable taking the Red Line at night from a Sox game.
And I'm curious what public transit activist groups have to say about that, right? Because... it's kind of an interesting political Venn diagram,
right?
Because usually advocates for public transit are also sort of more on the social justice angle of things, where they would talk about alleviating the root causes of poverty, but they also want as many people as possible to take the buses and the trains.
Yeah, right.
So what do they think is the appropriate level of law enforcement on both of those?
I don't know, but the CTA says it's fine. It's safe. You should be able to take it. You know, at all times, you should look around and make sure that nobody's going to steal your cell phone or, I don't know, beat you up. That's PR speak. I think it's true, but I don't think it solves the problem or even my apprehension.
So I had a rental car yesterday. I was coming back up from Matteson, South Suburb, and I stopped to get gas at 111th, and I left my front car door open. These two ladies yelled at me, and they said, "You're going to get your car hijacked. Don't you watch the news?" And then sped off.
Oh, really? And they were just citizens?
They were genuinely concerned for me.
Yeah. They were what are you doing?
What are you doing? Yeah. And I felt totally like the person who's sitting on the blue line train that's clearly not supposed to be sitting around the cell phone. $20 bill.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, under those circumstances, I'm a little bit like I am with coronavirus, where I'm a little belligerent. And sometimes it's not even in my best interest, but there's this sort of passive aggressiveness of me. If, for instance, in front of our condo, not too far from Wrigley Field, I will sometimes take something out of the vehicle in front, walk it in. And sometimes I'll leave the trunk gate open because I don't want to open and close it every damn time. And one of the neighbors just came out and reprimanded me right after we moved there. They said, "You can't do that." And I'm like, "This is not a bad neighborhood." They go, you know, they were, like your circumstance, adamant that I not make myself so vulnerable, which made me want to make myself more vulnerable.
No,
I'm going to prove the goodness of humanity. No one is going to steal my stuff in my car. I'm sure my kids are shaking their heads at that, just going, "Dad, you are setting yourself up. You're going to get busted." It's coming up on 1:30 on WGN. One more segment from the Mincing Rascals. I'm just thinking again about that headline in the Daily Herald. Jewel Osco limiting purchases. Now, this happened this week also at Costco, and there's a sign up saying, "Here are the things you can buy in limited quantities," and it's not just Purell. So we'll pick it up there in a minute on WGN. Whew! Do you have your headphones on, Griff? Were you ready to cover me there? Just had to run down the hall and check on something. I'm watching CNN, too. I see the great big American flag at Grant Park. And the national news coverage for the Bernie Sanders rally that's taking place in Chicago. He was supposed to be there at 1:30. I don't know if he's strolling across the stage yet or not. The Mincing Rascals talked a little bit about that political election, you know, the Democratic field and the president's chances, etc. But really not that much this week. There's just so many other stories to focus on, if you can imagine that. The Rascals were talking about, would you cancel an event in Chicago if you were the decider? because of the coronavirus? And is the media and are the rest of us overreacting? So here again are Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, Austin Berg from the Illinois Policy Institute, and Heather Sharon from the Daily Line. The Mincing Rascals is the weekly podcast we record here at WGN Radio. I'm John Williams, and this is where they sort of kick around that whole scene and how it affects us here in the Chicago area.
There's a story today about a guy who was in works in public works in a northern suburb who had contact with someone who had the virus. He's showing no signs of the virus. He's not testing for the virus, but he's under self-quarantine, and that was leading newscasts.
Well, there were four.
The guy's not sick.
Yeah, there were four ABC7 camera people who were sent home after being at the hospital in Arlington Heights, where they interacted with people who had interacted with the sick person, and that they were sent home, and that sort of set off a little wave in Chicago journalism Twitter of, did we talk to that person? Was that person at City Hall?
Like, I'm telling people to wash their hands after they listen to my show, because we've been talking about it, and I'd hate to see the virus spread across the airwaves. If you were in charge of an event in the city, would you cancel it as a precaution for everybody?
Well, look, I run a travel company, and I've got groups going to Europe. I've got one going in 14 days. Well, it's different because I'm not in a position to cancel it. We're obligated to do it, but I wouldn't cancel it either. I don't think there's a reason.
But you have a financial interest in that.
I do have a financial interest in it, but I don't. Well, look, I'm going on a trip in May, and I'm not even thinking of not going or not concerned about not going.
You also have a financial interest in doing it and it being the wrong choice, though.
Right, I do.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, right. So Steve is sort of putting his money where his mouth is there.
No, I don't think there's a reason not to go to Ireland right now. I don't think there's a. I can't think of a single reason not to go to Ireland.
Okay, but the question was about Chicago, though. So, Steve, now you're in charge of 10,000 people coming to McCormick Place or something like
that. Why would they not come? For what?
Because for the same reason 60,000 people aren't coming to the houseware show.
Well, if the reason is because a lot of the vendors are coming in from Asia or something, and you're going to have a dog show because they're not going to be able to make it, okay, I kind of get that. But let's say it's a show downtown at McCormick Place from people from this area or from people from the U.S. I mean, right now we know of three people in the metropolitan area who've contracted the disease who aren't married to someone who's got the disease. Three people. What's the fear here?
Chicago State's not going to Washington to play a basketball
Seattle,
game.
But that's Seattle, where there's a little bit more of an outbreak.
Okay, but
Concern is that, you know, it went from one person in Seattle, and they tried to track that one person's contacts, and really 6 weeks later, it was several hundred people. So it was clear that the virus was spreading undetected in that period. So the fear is that's what's happening now across the country, and that the lack of testing has meant that we don't know what we don't know. That said, the mayor and the Department of Health in Chicago has said that the risk is very low and that there's probably no difference in the risk I'm taking the CTA back home.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you're in close quarters on the CTA. We're not shutting the CTA down.
With the nature of a massive international trade show, you do have to account for the interconnectedness of the world, not just how many cases we have in Chicago. And when you look at a country like Switzerland, for instance, there's no events there with over 1,000 people there now, blanket, across the entire country.
Oh, by law, they can't.
By law.
Right now.
Because of corona. And, you know, I hate planning a meeting with 10 people, much less 60,000 people, so I can't accurately put myself in these folks' shoes. But they also have to predict the future, right? It's not as if you're saying, you know, tomorrow do we want 60,000 people and there's only a few cases in Chicago. They're saying, you know, in a few weeks, is this going to be a massive problem or not? And should we cancel it now so we can make alternative arrangements? And in that case, I kind of totally understand the problem. Where I want people to be aware, though, is MPEA cannot. It's already $4 billion in debt. MPEA is McPier, McCormick Place, and Navy Pier. They're in terrible financial shape already, not to mention if these things keep canceling.
A lot of events are still on. It's funny because a couple of events like the houseware show and what's the company that's just canceled their
Oracle?
Oracle. But those are 5,000 and 60,000 people. Several other events are still going to go on at McCormick. Evidently not enough to pay all the bills.
Not enough. Even if you had the full schedule, if you look over the last 10 years, the convention business in general is dying. There aren't as many massive trade shows that people want to go to because you can telecommute and, you know, sell your products differently. You don't have to go and see them. It's a massive problem going forward for them.
was with an event the other night, Steve, with Kelly Cruises, and a travel agency we do business with here. Brenda and I do trips with them as well as with your company. And so there was about 50 of us in this room, and it was just like a little get-together for people that have traveled with John and Brenda. Let's all have some sodas and talk about good times and talk about the next couple trips we're going to take. The room was packed, and there was a sort of belligerence among the travelers, like, no, F you, I'm going. Yeah. I'm going, you know, and I'm going to hug you when we get there. You know, I mean, there was that sort of attitude, this sort of...
I'm getting that, too, from a number of my people. I mean, there are people who are expressing concern or say, what happens if the trip gets canceled and things like that. But I've only heard from, of all the trips I've got scheduled right now, one couple who might be concerned. And, you know, and they've got health issues, and so there's good reason to be concerned.
People are worried about going to Disney World. I mean, the people that are worried about going to Disney World, where I understand it's... A-OK in Orlando, not Asia, is that it's just a bunch of Asians and other folks going to there.
What is the increased risk of it being an international hub? I mean, unless you're, if there's an increased risk if there's maybe a crowd from parts of China, parts of Iran, and parts of Italy. But otherwise, I don't know, you know, if I'm sitting next to a Saudi at lunch at a sushi bar, why am I more at risk than if I'm sitting next to Heather?
Well, the thing that concerns me is that we don't really quite understand how the virus jumped from China to Italy. We don't really understand sort of what that series of events was.
Well, you have a guess, though. I mean,
sure, but I would certainly feel better about traveling if that was clear to me, and that if there had been steps taken to prevent that from happening in other international cities. But I also think it's different, or at least it is for me as a parent, because, you know, if I get sick, then that means that my kids are likely to get sick, and that's not necessarily a risk I'm willing to take. I think people are also thinking along those lines.
Well, is this akin a little bit to the people that are afraid to come to Chicago because of gunfire? I mean, I was thinking about, gee, I better not go to Seattle because they have the virus there. But if you do the math, more people are getting shot in Chicago each week than are contracting the virus in the United States as a whole.
Tell the story about the guy who called your show from Seattle. You know, we're thinking that the city's shut down, and he's going to the dentist where the hygienist is sticking her fingers in his mouth.
Right. So it's like, oh, my God, the basketball team better not go to that state or that city because the virus is there. And this guy's going to a dentist who's going to put his fingers in his mouth.
Right. And then he's going to the opera that night.
And he is going to go to the opera that night with his mouth. And so you think, okay, wait, how will they survive? Isn't that dangerous? And you go, well, no, we're still going to live here in Seattle.
There are millions of people there.
So if I got on a plane and went to Seattle, is that really such a crazy or bad idea? And I think it's the same thing Chicago's always been fighting. We say, yeah, about 40 or 50 people are going to get shot this week in Chicago, but it's fine. You'll be okay. The numbers are on your side, especially if you know where the bullets are or where the nursing home is that the people were actually contracting the disease.
We also do a bad job of judging risks for ourselves, right? Like, I am far more likely to get into a car accident on my way home today than I am to get coronavirus.
Right.
But what is the majority of my, you know, back of the head anxiety about? Coronavirus, right?
Like, are you truly anxious about it?
I've got hypochondriac tendencies. Okay. So all of this, like, talk of sickness is really bad. Thank you for nodding your head at me, Austin. I feel better.
You know that about her, Austin?
No, I'll validate that. I mean, I'm not personally one of those people, and I think most people who know me get mad at me for not caring at all kind of about those risks. But in cases like this, it's such a macro phenomenon. It's similar to a market crash or anything that has, we would call it, fat tail risk, where you hit a tipping point and the match is lit and it explodes. That's the reason. It's not the reason because I personally don't want to get sick that you should not have major events. You don't want to have those events to reduce the risk of rapid spread. And I think those are two different things. It's not necessarily personal interest. It's a macro interest.
But that said, we did stock up on food and supplies.
Did you?
Oh,
my Lord.
And yeah, we did. Yeah.
What did you stock up on?
Beans and rice and tissue and toilet paper.
That's
and
the list.
Wipes.
That's the list.
The whole nine yards.
Were you at Costco?
I was not at Costco.
Can I read you a list, a notice that Costco has posted at
this
a store?
This is yours, really.
Yeah.
This is from Tracy Weiner, who is one of our, produced here for years. The sign says, because of the critical nature of several items, we will be imposing limits of 5 on each of the following: paper towels, toilet paper, water, rice, sugar, disinfectant wipes, Clorox, Lysol. You can only buy 5 of those units. Heather, you're not mentioned in this list, but that sounds like your grocery list from the other day.
It does.
But I mean, so you're worried, though, that if for some reason food becomes unavailable to you in sufficient quantities, you'll have enough?
It's more of that, you know, that there are people being told to basically stay home in Seattle, and that if that happens, I want to be able to say to my kids, you know, we're prepared. It's going to be fine. Like, we don't.
Heather Sharon is with the Daily Line, and one of the Mincing Rascals, and you hear that podcast. We drop a new episode every Thursday afternoon around 5. I'm just kind of chuckling. I didn't see that coming from Heather. Austin Berg and Steve Bertrand. Austin from the Illinois Policy Institute and our own Steve Bertrand, too. It's called The Mincing Rascals. It just reminds me of this story today. Jewel Osco is limiting purchases. Did you see what they're doing here in the Chicago area after this? Jim wanted to say something. Jim, afternoon. You're on WGN. What can I do for you?
Good afternoon to you. We have 2 upcoming trips planned. Our concern is not that we would get sick, but what if we get to the resort and somebody else gets sick? You get quarantined. You have 2 weeks of living expenses wherever you are. You're not going to be able to work back at home. You know, it's the fear of the unknown, and you don't even know what the unknown is. It's risky being away. The travel is a little concern, you know.
Yeah.
But if you get there, the people who went on the cruises, I'm sure they didn't know they were going to give up close to a month of their lives.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing I hear over and over again, Jim. You're not alone in that, right? So it's not like I'm afraid of the virus. I'm sensible about it, but I'm not petrified. But for every 20 people that get the virus, 4,000 people have to sit on a boat for 2 weeks and then stay in a hospital for 2 weeks.
So then, really, when we do consider that, the
Mincing Rascals sure didn't sound like they appreciated that. I'm glad you brought that up, Jim.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah. Good luck to you on that. I mean, I'm not going to tell you how to make you that call, but I know a lot of people are basing the decision based on that. It's not the fear of the virus. It's the fear of being quarantined. And now we have the fear of people just, I mean, this is Y2K all over again. Jewel Osco stores, I'm reading from Caitlin Smith's story in the Daily Herald today. Jewel Osco stores are setting limits on purchases of certain products as coronavirus fear set off panic buying of hand sanitizers and disinfectant wipes. There's no edible staples that they mention in this story, right? So like at the Costco, they said you can only buy 5 things of sugar. I'm not exactly sure why you need 5 pounds of sugar when the zombie apocalypse comes, but sugar, rice. Some of you are looking at those garbanzo beans you've kept in the basement for years affectionately. Like, yeah, what do you know? We could survive. Kroger has limited the number of sanitation, cold, and flu-related products to 5 each per order. In Naperville, Costco shoppers can buy only 5 packs of bottled water. And why are you hoarding the bottled water? I don't understand that. I mean, the water that you're going to get through your tap would still be good, right?
Yeah, but it just sounds like you. Well, who knows?
Right. I don't know. Maybe
I think I am not afraid of the virus.
Uh huh.
I like to think I'm sensible, like you said, but yeah. I don't walk around in fear.
Right.
I think you're probably upsetting people by being maybe a tad flip about it.
I think you're right about that.
You know, why would people need bottled water? Because we don't know what'll happen. Who knows what'll happen? And I think people just, they'd say, I'm being cautious. Is that a crime?
Yeah, right. I know. It's
why are you making fun of me?
I know. So whence my anger at you for doing what you want to do? Why do
exactly,
I care?
Yeah.
And by the way, you didn't keep me from buying bottled water because I don't buy bottled water.
We're saying that it's like another Y2K. It's like, we look back, Y2K was completely unfounded and silly, right?
Well, you had people are sick.
It is spreading.
Nobody got sick. No airplanes fell out of the sky Y2K. But that's because up until the clock clicked over, we changed the code on everything and we fixed it. Pretty much that's what happened with Y2K. Mm. In this case, there's no fix afoot. We don't know what the consequences
are. We just don't know. So people are, you know.
Yeah, you're right, Griff. I don't know why I've got this attitude, except that maybe I'm planning on doing some traveling. And so I think I'm imposing my desire to have some nice trips on on all of the Midwest.
And I don't think you should fear, but...
Online shoppers, I'm reading back again from the Daily Herald, online shoppers are increasingly using Instacart to have their groceries left at the doorstep without any human contact. The company makes home deliveries from nearly 1,000 store locations across Illinois. Aldi, Jewel-Osco, Costco, French Time Farmers Markets, Binney's Beverage Depot. Instacart has launched a new feature, in fact, called Leave It at My Door Delivery, to give customers the option of having their groceries dropped off at their doorsteps during a designated delivery time frame rather than receiving their orders in person. So again, it's easy to kind of roll your eyes at some of that, but if they want to do that, I guess why would any of us judge it, right? What's the harm in those people being more cautious than you or I want to be?
Beth on line one has a comments maybe about the harm that it could do.
Hey, Beth, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My issue, the harm that it can do, and I ran into this issue this week, is if you're just a regular shopper and you're not panic buying, you're not concerned about your soap or your toilet paper situation, and you need to go to the grocery store to buy one thing of soap or one package of toilet paper, there isn't any. It's all gone.
Yeah, even paper products. That's again, I just don't understand that. Paper towels and toilet paper. I don't understand why people are hoarding that, right?
Yeah, I don't understand it either. It's frustrating on my end because I have a very reasonable view of this. I'm not terribly concerned that I'm going to get it, and if I do get it, I think I'm healthy and I'm probably going to be fine. But I also understand that people are panic buying. But I just needed one thing of soap.
By the way, did you, though, have the same feeling I did? So Brenda and I were watching the news last night, and they said Chicago Public Schools, very dramatic, about 6:15 last night. They had that press conference with the mayor, and you just went, oh, okay, now that feels a little closer to home. All of a sudden, it felt a little more real to me. Again, I didn't run to the store to buy some stuff, but I will admit that I did have a slightly different reaction. I appreciate you listening, Beth.
I do. Yeah, we do have two trips planned, and my only change that I'm planning on for these two trips to go visit colleges for my kid, we're going to bring some hand sanitizer for when we can't wash our hands.
They say that in some of these public places, like say you're on a college campus and you're in a conference room with a bunch of prospective parents, I know that in some European cities they're telling people to stay 1 meter, a yard apart. So as we're all walking around, let's not share too much common space. Maybe you'll be told to do something like that. Who knows? Well, have a good trip with your kids.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Beth. Appreciate your listening. It's coming up on 156. By the way, about this time in the next hour, it'll be pregame coverage of Northwestern basketball. Dave Bennett has the call. He'll start that at 2:45. What are you looking at, Griff?
Oh, I was just thinking about Contagion being the movie Contagion being bumped up the on-demand menu.
Yeah. Did that bother you?
I saw it on, it's like in the top 20 movies that they're like, hey, rent this. It seems a little crass.
I know.
It's not in the best taste, I don't think.
Talk about profiteering. I mean, that's the digital equivalent of charging more for plywood when the hurricane is coming. I know how we can make some money. Contagion is on, everybody.
Every place has its local secrets, like that deep dish pizza place that tourists never make it to. But you do. I'm Peter Greenberg, and I've got the local secrets for cities all around the world. Learn them with me, the Travel Detective, right here on 720 WGN.
Tonight at 7.
You don't need to waste another minute suffering from hip or knee pain, especially when you can feel new again in no time. Eliminating hip or knee pain has never been easier than a visit to Dr. Sean W. Palmer at the Hip and Knee Center, now part of Ortho Illinois. Dr. Palmer has performed more than 7,000 successful anterior hip and total knee replacements. And it's that experience and quite a stellar reputation that has patients coming from around the world, men and women of all ages, sizes, and activity levels, can benefit from an outpatient anterior hip or total knee replacement that requires no general anesthesia and no restrictions on activity. In fact, recovery is measured in days to weeks, not months. You can be home the same day and start planning all the things you've been missing out on doing. So if the pain is just too much and you want to feel new again, make the call. 1-866-FEEL-NEW. 1-866-FEEL-NEW, or learn more at thehipandkneecenter.com. Now part of Ortho Illinois.
Hi folks, Orion here. If you're in the market for a new Subaru, now is the time to go to Gary Lang Subaru during their March Mayhem event. Gary Lang Subaru has a winning team lineup of Legacies, Imprezas, Foresters, Outbacks, Crosstrek, and Ascents, all in stock with 3-point play savings and ready to take home today. Plus, your sales team at Gary Lang Subaru is the most trusted and resourceful in the business. Take it from me, there is no other dealership that I would trust for my new Subaru. So folks, stop into Gary Lang Subaru and score the winning shot during their March Mayhem event going on right now. Or visit GaryLangSubaru.com. Buy or lease your Subaru entirely online. You simply can't afford to buy a new Subaru anywhere else. Gary Lang Subaru, just minutes away on Route 31 between Crystal Lake and McHenry. And remember, if it doesn't say Gary Lang on the back, you probably paid too much.
For help around the house with roofs, windows, kitchens, bathrooms, home additions, and basement remodels, trust the folks at Mega Pros. Satisfaction guaranteed. Go to megapros.com.
Listen, could Robert change your life?
At the age of 55, I started putting on weight, and I got to the weight of about 210 pounds. Always hungry. The heavier I got, the less energy I had. And about 6 months ago, I started taking the Andro 400, and I started realizing I had more energy. I felt better, and my mind was clearer, and I started losing weight. I went from my max weight was 215, and now I'm down to 176. My waist size has dropped from a 38 to a 32, and I've lost these big love handles that I had on my side, and I just look a lot slimmer.
Since 2004, Andro 400 has helped men lose belly fat, gain energy, and to look and feel their best. Go to andro400.com for more true testimonials, before and after photos, and special discounts. Only available on andro400.com. andro400.com.
Serving the great Midwest from Chicago, this is WGN at AM 720 on your radio and on smart devices anywhere just by saying play WGN Radio on TuneIn.
WGN Chicago.
A Nexstar Media Group station.
47 degrees at 2 o'clock. Good afternoon. I'm James Sears. The news sponsored by WGN America. Bernie Sanders holding a rally in Chicago at this hour. Plus, sports betting begins Monday in Illinois. WGN traffic. Want to let you know about some St. Patrick's Day parades happening right now in Countryside, Forest Park, Lamont, Elmhurst, all happening right now. So take care as you're heading around those areas and looking at our expressways. Want to let you know about Lakeshore Drive. There's a stop-and-go traffic right now between northbound between Roosevelt and Monroe and southbound on Lakeshore Drive. All of that because of a Bernie Sanders rally happening right now in the loop. On the Kennedy, it's 34 minutes coming in from O'Hare. On the Stevenson, 20 minutes coming in to the Circle. And that was the Eisenhower, actually, 20 minutes in from 294. And on the Stevenson, 21 minutes in from the Tri-State. The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center, meteorologist Mike Hammernick.
Sunny skies will be with us all day long. In fact, 100% sunshine today with really not a cloud in the sky expected. It'll be milder and breezy this afternoon. Look for a high of 53. Clear, not as cold tonight, a low of 39. Tomorrow, continued sunny, rather windy. Warmest day of 2020 to date is on the way tomorrow with a high of 63. On Monday, a storm system rolls in that'll produce clouds and windy conditions once again. Rain is likely by the afternoon hours. High of 53 on Monday. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, 48. Wednesday, cloudy with a chance of rain. High of 44. From the WGN Weather Center, I'm Mike Hammernick.
Right now, Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders is in Chicago holding a free rally in Grant Park at the Petrillo Music Shell right now until 3:30. Earlier, he was in Dearborn, Michigan, taking the time to court the younger voters who didn't come out in larger amounts in the last primary.
I am very proud that we are winning the overwhelming percentage of young people who are voting. We need more of them to vote. Young people, let us get involved in the political process.
And Sanders' rally in Rockford Tuesday just canceled today. The campaign says due to scheduling constraints, Joe Biden will be in Chicago next week. Illinois voters get their say in the March 17th primary. Classes canceled next week at Chicago's Vaughn Occupational High School after an employee there tested positive for COVID-19, the sixth in the state. A special education classroom assistant currently hospitalized in stable condition. The fifth person diagnosed with COVID-19 was released from Rush University Medical Center yesterday to continue recovering at home. Meanwhile, about the third and fourth cases out in Arlington Heights, more than 100 people who had contact with that husband and wife are being monitored for signs of coronavirus infection. And at Indiana, to states with a coronavirus case, WGN's Roger Battish reports.
Indiana health officials confirmed the first illness in the state from the coronavirus happened in Indianapolis. The man's in stable condition and self-isolation after going to a hospital late Thursday with mild symptoms. The man had attended a conference in Boston where he was exposed to others with COVID-19. Roger Battish, WGN News.
And 400 cases of coronavirus right now in the U.S., 19 deaths reported. Worldwide fears of coronavirus and a potential 14-day isolation period have given way to potential legions of nervous hoarders, leaving the shelves of supermarkets bare. Here in our area, we're talking about this, Jewel, Osco, Kroger, Costco, limiting the number of things you can buy, like hand sanitizer, disinfectant wipes, and water. In Sydney, Australia, police were called to a supermarket today after a woman was struck by another person over a pack of toilet paper in one of the aisles. Acting Inspector at New South Wales Police, Andrew New, urges Australians to refrain from buying mass amounts of supplies out of panic.
At this point in time, we just ask that people don't panic like this when they go out shopping. There's no need for it. It's not the Thunderdome. It's not Mad Max. We don't need to do that.
Meanwhile, today in China, a hotel used to observe people exposed to the virus collapsed, trapping some 70 people. A student at Windsor Elementary School in Arlington Heights has been diagnosed with pertussis, otherwise known as whooping cough. Symptoms include rapid coughing fits, vomiting after coughing, and exhaustion. A letter yesterday to parents advised that if their children showed any symptoms, see your doctor and keep your child home. Pertussis is highly contagious. An inmate was fatally beaten by another inmate at Thompson Prison, about 150 miles west of Chicago. Matthew Phillips was found unresponsive at that high-security penitentiary on Monday. He died at the hospital on Thursday. Legal sports betting is expected to begin next week in Illinois. WGN's Steve Bertrand with more.
Rivers Casino in Des Plaines says it will begin taking bets at noon on Monday, meaning the facility will be up and running in plenty of time for the NCAA basketball tournament, which begins March 17th. Rivers is one of six casinos across the state that has already applied for a sports betting license. The new law allows the state's 10 casinos, 3 horse tracks, and 7 of its largest sports arenas to all offer licensed betting. Steve Bertrand, WGN News.
Well, we spring forward at 2 a.m. We'll likely stay that way for a while. A bill to keep us at Central Daylight Time is stalled in the House, but even if Governor Pritzker signed it into law, it'd need approval from the federal government. The Illinois State Fire Marshal's Office reminding you to change your clock, change your batteries. About a quarter of smoke alarm failures are due to dead batteries. In WGN Sports, Northwestern hosts Penn State today in the last game of the regular season. The pregame at 2:45, the tip-off at 3 with Dave Bennett and Joey Meyer on 720 WGN and WGNRadio.com. Duke hosts North Carolina today. You can hear that game on WGN right after Northwestern basketball. The Hawks lost last night in Detroit. They host St. Louis tomorrow. The pregame with Chris Bowden at 6. The faceoff at 6:30 with John Weideman and Troy Murray on 720 WGN and WGNRadio.com. In spring training, Sox versus San Francisco happening, getting underway momentarily. The Cubs also versus Cleveland, also getting underway any minute now. It is 47 degrees at O'Hare, 46 at Midway, 48 in Orland Park, and on Chicago's lakefront. I'm James Sears on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
We can beat them all.
Service to a green tea.
Hi, this is Tonya Khoury of Green Tea Windows. Increase the beauty and value of your home with our exceptional, energy-efficient, EPA-certified windows. They're made here in the U.S. with a lifetime warranty. And our installers have a minimum 7 years' experience. And listen to this. Our windows have the newest technology, self-cleaning glass. Yes, our special glass actually cleans itself. Dirt, dust, and water just rolls right off.
Service to a green tea.
Green tea can beat any window offer. Right now, buy one window, get the second window for $1. Yes, buy one window, get the second window for just $1. Plus, 0% financing is available. Call us now for details and a free estimate. Call 800-5-GREEN-TEA.
Green Tea Services. Service to a
green
tea. 800-5-GREEN-TEA.
800-5-GREEN-TEA. Or greenteaservices.com.
Ready? Okay.
What's going on?
Lend me your ear and hear my cheer.
Oh, my.
Okay, so you're a cheerleader now? Don't leave your shoes on while getting your snooze on.
What on earth are you wearing?
I wear what I want because I'm a savant.
Please tell me that's not a skort.
If your mattress is sagging, then you will be dragging.
Oh, brother.
I have no words.
If you are sleep crazed, you'll forget your briefcase.
Okay, now he's just stretching for rhymes.
I wish he'd put on some tights or something.
A flippable mattress with foam that is matchless.
Okay, I think they get it. We carry our own line of Penny Mustard mattresses.
Go to sleep.
Boy, when he commits to something, he really commits.
Come see our magnificent selection of Sophistocrafted flippable mattresses, like the Queen Heather flippable mattress, only $996 at Penny Mustard.
Six locations throughout Chicagoland.
PennyMustard.com.
Ugh, better versions of what people want.
Penny Mustard.
Lou Manfredini here, and this House Smarts Minute is sponsored by Design First Builders, remodeling homes and building relationships. As winter fades into spring, signs of life begin to emerge after a long winter nap. Flowers begin to bloom, animals begin to move about, and termites begin to swarm. From now through May or June, if you notice these winged insects flying in and out of a hole in the woodwork, it might be time to call a licensed professional pest control company to take a look. For more information, go to HouseSmartsRadio.com. And now this. Want to fall in love with your home all over again? Design First can make that happen. Design First Builders is a custom home remodeler that handles every step of your remodeling project. Joanne from Schaumburg said, "Design First completely remodeled our kitchen almost 3 years ago, and I still love it every time I walk into it." Call and schedule your free in-home consultation to see how they can help turn your dreams into a reality. Call 630-250-7777 or visit designfirstbuilders.com. Design First Builders, remodeling homes and building relationships.
210 WGN 245, pregame coverage. Dave Enna will have that. It's Northwestern Wildcat basketball right around the corner. March Madness, the tournaments, it's all coming up, I'm sure. Look, that was my bright side this week. I was just on our show on Friday talking about things we're all happy about, things that are making you smile. And maybe it's hard to find those some days, but if you work on it, you can. And the hoop season's really going to get interesting here. I'm looking forward to that. In fact, a neighbor of mine, he had a bright side today, too. I was walking to my train, and he said, hey, you might get a call from somebody as a reference, but I'm going to refinance my mortgage. And he bought just like a couple years ago. I don't even think it was 2 years ago, but no, he bought more than 2 years ago. But the point is, he was somewhere in like the high threes. And he said, I'm going to save a couple $100 a month by refinancing. So you got that going for you out there. I just saw a scroll on CNN. Facebook is now banning ads for medical face masks. We were talking earlier about how some people are profiteering off the panic out there, legitimate or otherwise. But Facebook is going to ban ads for medical face masks. Our friend Tracy Weiner and Beth Swerk also, I think, sent me a thing about how they're seeing ads for hand sanitizers that would go for $2 a bottle for $30 a bottle. I don't know if people are getting that, Griff, but people are asking for it anyway.
That's great. We talked about the profiteering of putting Contagion back up on the on-demand menu, giving it a prized place near the top.
Yeah,
I was struck just thinking about how this is not the same. It's more serendipitous, and it's just a coincidence that the two most popular reality shows, as far as my circle of friends or people that I know, both involve sequestering yourself in a room and communicating with people only through technology or like, which is Love is Blind. I don't know if you've heard of this show.
They're I have.
Both Netflix shows.
I'm sorry to hear this.
Love is Blind and The Circle. It's so funny that just as this panic is sweeping, the shows that were already very popular among a certain group of people maybe, but I think they're being widely watched.
No, I'm reading about them. I haven't watched them. I've
watched like one episode of each.
I plowed through Cheer. I plowed through Drive to Survive, the Formula One series in its second season. That dropped on Netflix. But so what's the premise of these shows, Griff?
Well, The Circle is like a competition show where each of the people is in their little apartment alone, and they communicate to the rest of the people on the show, The Circle, through this app, this social media app called The Circle. And then this is my limited understanding. Every once in a while, they have to rank all the people that are in the app. And if you are lowest, then you have to leave the show.
So like Survivor, only digitally.
And it's kind of unclear what makes you good or bad. You know, you're just talking to each other. So yeah, you just want to be well-liked. Some people are catfish. They use fake photos.
Really?
And create a fake persona. That's the kind of the thing. You can choose to be yourself, or you can choose to... Anyway, and then at the end, the highest-ranked person or whatever wins. I think it might have been $1 million. I can't remember. And then Love is Blind is people in similar pods talk to each other for, like, I don't know, a very small period of time, and then they get engaged, but they never see each other. They're only talking in separate rooms, and they don't know what the other one looks like. And then
really?
They,
oh, they don't have, really?
To marry each other. And then the second phase of the show, then you follow their engagements, and they're on, like, a fast track to marriage.
But what if they're not physically attracted to each other?
Well, I think, I don't know.
Well, then you still have to get married and have kids because you were on the show.
Completely ridiculous because, you know, they keep positing that it's like, well, maybe that doesn't matter. But they've picked all conventionally attractive people. And I think that was probably in the back of the contestants' minds, like, well, there's probably someone young and good looking like me.
Well, that explains it, because I saw a headline about this.
I mean, to varying degrees, but still, come on.
The headline I saw in one article on this show was, if they had some really fat people on there, I would be more interested. I mean, if that's the premise or the theory.
Well, you don't want to put those people through it, and you know, there's a way that could be
insensitive
created
to those individuals.
Yeah, as like this reveal is going to be terrible, something like that. You don't want that. But if you're going to claim that your show is all about the blindness of love, and that it can be achieved, you know, through souls meeting without this. It's definitely a little hollow, but I don't think that they would care about me saying that. They'd be like, did you watch it? That's all I care about. but it's just funny to me that it's people in these pods.
I got a text.
It's like,
this,
maybe we got that coming.
I got a text this week from somebody who had heard us talk about Cheer, the show about the competitive cheerleading competition and how well this one school does, junior college in Texas. One of the stars of that show, one of the kids that's on the team, is a Naperville kid who I believe is now still going to that junior college and getting ready for this year's cheer championships in Daytona, Florida. John, we were riveted by Cheer, and I agree that Gabby's father, Gabby is the superstar, and you meet her, is this really terrific gymnast cheerleading person. You meet her mother and father. John, we agree that Gabby's father was probably the most nefarious character of them all. I would like a follow-up of where they are now, particularly the young lady who dropped out and started partying again. I hope the best for all of them. Yeah, I do too. And Cheer is a show that I really like. And Brendan and I just plowed through it one night. And then the other show that you can get into if you're looking for something to do now that we're all sequestered is Drive to Survive, that Formula One series.
Yeah, you love that show.
I do. We were at dinner the other night, and my son, my daughter-in-law, my wife, and I were talking about it the way you would the Cubs. We were talking about drivers. We were talking about teams. We know who the Rizzo was. It was a very interesting show. And who knew that America could get captured by that? But I think you would be. It's 2:16. This is WGN. Just one other thing that I discovered, if you're looking for something to watch, and with this weather, you shouldn't be. Go out and play ball. But I watched Dark Waters with Mark Ruffalo and Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
Now, that movie came out last year?
Late last year. Right in the Oscar season.
How did I not see this thing coming?
Everybody missed it. It's one of those things.
Ruffalo is always great, and he's terrific in this.
It's a really good movie.
He's the attorney who exposes how DuPont... It's the telling of a true story. How DuPont and its manufacture of Teflon was poisoning the people in West Virginia over the last several decades. They made Teflon, and in making Teflon, it spoiled the water table and the air. They were putting out carcinogens, and they seemed to know it and didn't seem to do anything about it. It's sort of like Aaron Brockovich with Ruffalo in there. It feels a little like Spotlight, but It's just one of these great investigative, do the hard work things and the good people win.
Yeah, he gives a couple speeches that are very reminiscent of speeches he gave in Spotlight in similar clothes, and it's like,
yeah, I know.
Where am I? But it also reminded me of The Report, the Adam Driver movie also kind of got overlooked in the award season, although I liked that movie less. Dark Waters, he has a very similar structure of you know, taking a huge amount of data and breaking it down and coming up with the answers of people doing horrible things. And but this was made by a director named Todd Haynes, and he just has a really artful hand in, but also plainly laying out that information. You know, with things like this, you don't want it to turn into like an audiobook. You want it to be cinematic in some way.
And think about that, what the challenge is when real thrust of it is a lawyer going through documents to prove that some carbon atoms are dangerous to people. That's not cinematic.
Yeah, and Todd Haynes is like has a reputation as an arty kind of guy. He made Carol about 5 years ago with Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara. That's maybe his best known movie, but he's had a storied career. So it's cool that he took on something more pedestrian like this and sort of elevated it.
You referenced the Adam Driver movie. What's that one about again?
That was about the torture in Afghanistan after 9/11.
And the investigation into it. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And so the name of this movie is Dark Waters. And on my scale of 1 to 23, Jujubes, 19, Griff. 19 for
me. I'm around there. I thought it was really good.
Here's some good reading. Mary Schmeek's Even the Terrible Things Seem Beautiful to Me Now on Hope, Loss, and Wearing Sunscreen. Mary Schmeek's book came out in a second edition with some new columns. It's a collection of her columns. She, of course, the Pulitzer Prize-winning commentary writer, the columnist for the Chicago Tribune. So the book came out a little before Christmas and was a great gift then, and it's still great reading and a great gift now. These are not brand new columns, some of them newer than others, but I have been just going through it on my train rides lately and sometimes crying on the train. We're talking and thinking so much about travel and our apprehension these days, and this is her Sunday, June 21st piece about travel. My mother needed to go to Paris before she died. She never talked about it that way. Paris has a stamp on her passport to the afterlife. But every now and then, when one of my siblings and I talked about the years each of us had spent living in France, she would muse, "I'd love to go to Paris someday." As my mother got older, the idea bubbled up more and more. In other words, as it grew less and less likely that she could physically make the trip, by her mid-70s, she was leaning on a cane for simple jaunts from her front door to the mailbox. I could not imagine how she'd make it through the Charles de Gaulle airport. Still, the notion nagged. During most of the 32 years of her marriage, my mother hadn't gone far beyond the church and the grocery store. She'd flown on a plane only two or three times. She did, however, remember traveling before she was married and loved to tell the stories. There was the time in the late 1930s when she, her mother, and sister rode a train across Canada. There was the time circa 1945 when she and a friend drove her two-door Dodge sedan from Macon, Georgia to Boston. Charming men with their southern accents all the way up the eastern seaboard. There was the bicycle trip through Quebec, the one that she and her college roommate Martha would have taken if Martha's parents hadn't said young women had no business bicycling alone. When I was growing up, Mary Schmeek writes, my mother told these stories as if to show that she was someone else, not Mrs. Schmeek, but Mary Ellen, an independent woman, enigmatic, bold, before she was the mother of eight who could barely afford gas for the station wagon. When my mother was 61, my father died. A loss, a liberation. My siblings and I began to take her traveling. She flew by herself to see my brother Chris, who was living in Moscow. She flew alone to see my brother Michael, who was living in Hiroshima, Japan. With my brothers, she toured New Orleans, the coast of Oregon, the Colorado Mountains. I drove her once from Phoenix to Chicago and once from Chicago to Boston. Except for her inability to speed read a map and her tendency to do dramatic oral readings of road signs, gas, food, lodging, 3 miles. She was the ideal traveling companion. She greeted every new place with delight and curiosity, talked to everyone, ate anything, slept anywhere. Time as it does passed. By the time she was 77, she was stooped by osteoporosis and hobbled by bad feet, barely able to pick up even a heavy purse. Paris, in her physical condition, it might as well be the moon. And then I had a thought. Mama, how do you feel about a wheelchair? At the time, talking to my mother about a wheelchair felt to me like asking her about her casket. I had met elderly people who would rather shut themselves inside their homes for good than be seen outside in a wheelchair. A wheelchair to them was, at best, a hassle, at worst, a humiliation, infantilization, the defeat of the will to walk. A wheelchair, my mother said? That's a wonderful idea. And so we went to France. The wheelchair, as it turned out, was a ticket to the express lane. In respect at customs, the wheelchair attendant whisked us past the parade of rumpled, yawning flyers. At the taxi stand, we were waved to the head of the line. At the Musée d'Orsay, the Grand Railroad Station turned into a museum. We checked out a wheelchair in the cloakroom and were granted access to the paintings before they opened to the mob. South of Paris, in the Loire Valley, we used one of the wheelchairs supplied by the chateau and rolled merrily through the long tiled corridors, across the River Cher, out onto the gardens of the kings and the queens. This is how to get the royal treatment, my mother said. Get a wheelchair. One day we drove north to Mont Saint-Michel, the Gothic abbey that rises like a dream on a cone of rock in the middle of a bay. I told my mother I was going to hike the 900 or so steps to the top while she sat in a cafe. I was worried that she wouldn't come, but there were no elevators, no cars, no wheelchairs. Maybe I'll just walk a little ways, she said. Slowly, we climbed the first few stairs. She held my arm with one hand, the stone banister of the ramparts with the other, and then we stopped to rest, the bay glittering below. Just a few more, she said. Another stair, then two, four, ten. She had to sit down. And then, and I still don't know how this happened, she decided to crawl, and somehow, a few hundred steps later, she was at the top. If I were a certain kind of person, I would call what happened that day a miracle, that a white-haired woman, stooped by time and tired bones, made it on her feet and hands and knees to the top of one of the wonders of the world. There comes a time in most of our lives when travel truly is impossible. But that time may not be as soon as you imagine, if you can. Give your parents the gift of travel. It will be a gift to yourself, says Mary Schmeek in a collection of her columns called Even the Terrible Things Seem Beautiful to Me Now. By the way, the next story in that collection is about Mary as a young woman, 19 or 20 years old, and a friend. And they are in France, and they need to come home now. But they see an ad, and it says, we are looking for women to be the cooks on our riverboat. And so they go, well, that's a good idea. Let's go be cooks on a riverboat. They didn't know how to cook, and they didn't know anything about this riverboat. The riverboat was three men on the boat, kind of a yacht. And Mary says that when she and her girlfriends got on the boat to be the cooks, they realized that they weren't hired to be the cooks. And it was a very tense situation because they stayed on that boat cooking for those men who wanted a lot more than hot food. It's a fascinating story. As are they all when Mary Schmeek tells them, even the terrible things seem beautiful to me now. It's 2:28. This is WGN. Going to talk a little White Sox baseball with our friend Andy Mazur here in just a second. It's 2:32 on WGN. At 2:45, pregame coverage of Wildcat basketball. Dave Ennett will have the call and the tip for you at 3. And pregame in about 13 minutes. I suppose since it's 2:32, James Sears, the Bernie Sanders rally, well, I don't know, they may be in full swing or winding down. He was supposed to be there at 1:30, right, at Grant Park?
Yeah, it's supposed to go till 3:30. I don't know when he was set to speak. I haven't looked recently.
Yeah, right. I'm looking at the schedule, and it says the rally is supposed to start at 1:30. He's flying in. As of Friday, after voting in 18 states and American Samoa, Biden has won 664 delegates, Sanders 573. All the momentum is with Joe, of course, but Bernie's right there. It takes 1,991 to nominate a candidate, and he's got 664, Bernie 573. And remember the last time with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders on the ticket for the Democrats, Clinton won 79 delegates and Sanders 77. So it was a horse race last time between the two of them. He only lost to Hillary by 2. He is, of course, a University of Chicago grad, and they got nice weather there. What are the current conditions and all?
Current conditions right now, we're 50 at O'Hare, 49 at Midway. Sunny skies, breezy this afternoon. Our high today is 53 degrees. Tonight, clear, not as cold. It'll be low of 39. And tomorrow, the sunshine continues. It'll still be windy. But the warmest day of 2020 to date, a high of 63 degrees tomorrow.
Got it. Okay. So perfect weekend. And one more time, the high tomorrow is going to be what?
63 degrees.
It's funny because there's this thing in my ear. It sounds like you said 63 degrees.
Yep.
That'll be the warmest temperature of the year, right?
That's correct.
I think the last time it was this warm, and by the way, Andy Mazur joins us now. Are you in Arizona or are you in Chicago, Andy?
No, I'm in Arizona where it's 85 degrees.
Yeah, but get a load of this. I think the last time it was this warm, 63, 64, 65 in Chicago, was December 26th. December 26th, I know it was in the 60s. Then it dropped off a little bit, but isn't that crazy? What a weird winter we've had. Christmas to, you know, March Madness, and it's been we've been getting away with it is what I'll say. By the way, 85.
Let's hope it stays that way till opening day, you know?
That's the thing, Andy. I've been thinking about this lately. We've had days lately that are so much better than what you'll see the first 2 weeks of baseball in Chicago.
I know.
And I don't know, maybe if this continues, it'll be 75. We've had opening days in this town where it's in the 70s. I swear to God that's happened. But the last few, it seems to me, it's been snowing in the eighth inning.
Yes. That was the case a couple of years ago in, on the south side.
Yeah, right. There we were. It's like, hooray, we got the White Sox on WGN, and this is a really up-and-coming team. It was snowing hard in the eighth
inning.
Yes,
it was.
Yeah, yeah. So you're still in Arizona. We are not broadcasting the game today. Did they play today, Andy?
They're playing currently. They're in Scottsdale taking on the Giants today. Dallas Keuchel is on the mound for the White Sox today. And we're back on. I'll be with DJ on Monday. So we'll have a 3 o'clock first pitch.
Yeah. Bring it, man. It's kind of funny. We are doing, I don't know if we did that many, spring training games last year. These are just spring training games. But it sure is fun to hear baseball on the radio in Chicago in March, man. You guys sound great.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it was fun being, we were at Sloan Park in Mesa yesterday where the Cubs train, and they set a single game Cactus League record with attendance yesterday of just over 16,000 were out there, and this is spring training.
Yeah.
And then I'll tell you what, there were a lot of White Sox fans out there sprinkled in with the Cubs fans as well, and it was a pretty enjoyable, entertaining game. And you know, this team is starting to round into shape a little bit here. They're signing some of their young players to long-term deals, which is certainly a good thing, especially with the core kind of staying together. So it's pretty impressive.
That's interesting because if you get 16,000 for a spring training game, and granted it's the Cubs and it's Arizona and everybody wants to get away, but there will be regular season games where the White Sox might not hit 16,000, you know, early in the season, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a possibility. But, I really think that the buzz that you can feel, which is kind of palpable when you're walking to the clubhouse here, It's being felt throughout the fandom of the White Sox because there's a lot of energy. I mean, I remember walking around at Sox Fest. It just seemed different this year than it did even last year and the first year we were involved because of all the moves that were made here in the offseason. There's a lot of interest in this team, and Rick Hahn continues to work his magic, you know, getting Yoan Moncada to agree to a five-year contract extension yesterday at a, you know, I guess you could say reasonable rate these days for a player, but it's kind of fun to watch how this is all coming together.
Yeah, I hope it translates the way you're saying. I don't know what it's like normally for people to wear White Sox hats around town, but one of my sons has taken to wearing one fashionably lately, and when I'm with him, it never fails. Somebody will often, people will come up to him and just go, yeah, White Sox, thumbs up, hey. And we were having a conversation with people we didn't know the other day, walking down the sidewalk, talking about some of the moves the White Sox have made. It was in the parking deck at Wintrust Arena, and they're talking White Sox with people who really are excited about this team this year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the White Sox share a complex here in Glendale with the Dodgers. So, the Dodgers obviously are one of these universally loved teams as far as getting all the glitz and glamour of Hollywood and things of that nature. So there's a lot of Dodgers fans down here, of course, that will migrate to the facility. But I got to tell you, there's quite a few White Sox fans milling around out there as well. The attendance may not be as high as it is when the Dodgers play. But the Dodgers seem to be getting all the weekend games out here, so it's a little bit of a different story. The White Sox have a bunch of the weekday games where not a lot of schools are on spring break yet. So I think we'll probably see a pickup in attendance coming up here next week.
WGN Radio's Andy Mazur's on the line from Arizona. You hear him do some of the games, sometimes all of the games, sometimes part of the games, before the games, after the games. He's one of our three big voices for the White Sox. I'll ask you the same question that I asked you last time we talked, about a week ago. Mm-hmm. What jumped out at you this week? What was most noteworthy to you?
This week, getting a chance to really see Luis Robert play, it's pretty fun. It's really fun. But I think the thing that really stood out this week was just the fact that we got to see Lucas Giolito back on the mound.
Yeah,
really important that he got to get into at least an inning of work yesterday. That was all by design. He only threw 15 pitches and then went into the bullpen and threw a few more. I asked Ricky Renteria today over at the complex whether he came out of it okay, and Ricky said he came out of it with flying colors. He was excited to get back out there. Obviously, it's very good for the club to have him out there. So now he's going to be on a regular five-day schedule. So 5 days from yesterday, he's going to go ahead and pitch in a game as well. So he is on track to likely make the opening day start. We haven't really pinned Ricky down to that, but it would make a lot of sense, especially with the season that he had last year and all the mechanical changes that he made last year, and also going from basically last in ERA to among the leaders. So it was a good thing to see that last year, and hopefully he's going to be able to repeat and get back out there and hopefully start opening day.
Hit Schwarber with the pitch, didn't he?
Yeah. That was a hit by a pitch, and it was the jersey flap in the wind that caught a little bit of the ball. That was about it. If there was a replay yesterday, there would have been a lot of calls that were challenged. The umpiring crew is in spring training form as well.
I guess nobody cares too much when that happens down there, whatever, right? They're just getting into the
bats. Yeah, just got to get the work in. Yeah, get the work in, see some pitching, do some pitching, get to run the bases a little bit here, because Yasmani Grandal also made his spring debut yesterday. And good to see him behind the plate, taking some at-bats from both sides of the plate as well. So he's been slowed a little bit by a calf injury, but I think that's pretty much behind him at this point. So hopefully all systems are go for him as well. He took a day off, and he'll get back out there. I believe he'll be in the lineup tomorrow when the White Sox get back in action.
Andy, we'll all forgive Tim Anderson if he's not as good this year as he was last year. And who knows how many hits he would have totaled last year if he hadn't been injured for a while. But even after his injury, he continued to hit the ball. Is he looking like the Anderson of last season?
Yeah, you may forgive him for that. He won't forgive himself, let's put it that way, because this is a perfectionist that we're dealing with here. Every season, he comes in through the door for the first day of spring training, and last year, whether it's a great year like last year or a so-so year like the year before, it's out the window. Doesn't even matter. You can't really ask him about it. He doesn't want to talk about it because he's so focused on what he's going to do this year to improve upon that. He still thinks he has some things to work on. And probably more defensively than offensively. That's one of those things, especially on the left side of the infield, where you're looking at Moncada and also at Anderson. They made probably a few more errors than I think the White Sox were comfortable with last year, and they know it, and they're working on it. So I think that's probably where the big improvements will come this year for Anderson. And it's going to be hard to expect him to hit .335 again. And it's not a real reality kind of a thing. I mean, if he does, more power to him. You'd rather see him get on base a little bit more, maybe via the walk. And also, the power numbers were pretty good last year as well with 18 home runs.
Yeah, and the bat flip.
And the bat flip, of course. That's world renowned. He is not he's still not apologizing for that because, and why should he? I mean, he plays the game with a lot of exuberance. His teammates like it. I mean, it would be one thing if his teammates thought he was showing somebody up and they didn't approve of it, but they're on board.
I don't think this is cocky, and I don't think this is a cocky team. I think it's a joyful team. We got to go. I'm looking at the clock. We'll wrap it up here, Andy. But why don't you check in with us again this week and let's continue the optimistic outlook and report the good news about the White Sox.
Sounds good to me, John.
Okay, Andy. Safe travels. Enjoy the sun.
Thank you. You guys too.
Andy Mazur, you'll hear him Monday afternoon on WGN doing White Sox baseball. Oh, that'll be fun. Okay, so that's about it for today. 2:44 on WGN. I am back on Monday, 9 a.m. until 12 noon on social media, WGN King John. The highlight for you this weekend, Griff, what's coming up next? You got any big plans?
It's my friend Tori's birthday coming up soon, so we're celebrating. Happy birthday, Tori. I don't think she's listening.
Oh, no, she's a nut for White Sox baseball.
It's her loss, but I don't think she's listening.
All right. So you have a good weekend, too. We'll continue to follow the news here at WGN Radio.
Let me give a plug just really quick.
Yeah.
I'm going to see a movie called First Cow on Wednesday.
I saw the trailer.
On Wednesday at, what's it called?
University of Chicago, right?
Doc Films is the program. Yeah, at Ida Noyes Hall. It's free, 7 p.m. The director will be there. First come, first serve. I'm really excited about this movie.
Documentary, you say?
No.
It's a feature film.
It's a drama.
Okay. It's called First Cow. Director in town. Griffin will be there. Well, that ought to move some units.
It's free. I don't know.